So we could see that something drastic was happening to our environment, but it was all being done in the name of development. The other connection that we made was that we were beginning to bring electricity to our people, and we knew that without electricity, it is very difficult to protect forests and to protect trees, because people will burn trees. I'm sure many of you saw when we had a problem in Yugoslavia, or the former Yugoslavia. You saw people using firewood. Now, if that crisis had continued for a long time, every tree in Yugoslavia would be cut to burn, and especially in winter. Well, we don't have cold weather, but nevertheless, we use a lot of wood. So electricity is one way in which we can protect trees by providing that alternative source of energy. 70% of our electricity comes from the River Tana, which is the largest river in Kenya. Now, the streams that feed this river comes from two mountains, those of you who are familiar with Kenya, from Mount Kenya and from the Aberdare Ridge. These two mountains have more rivers than anybody cares to count. I have heard that from Mount Kenya alone flow 300 rivers, streams that eventually coalesce and form the largest river in Kenya. Now, across that river, we have created dams in order to generate hydropower. Now, as long as there is siltation in the rivers, because of what is being done upstream, we have never been able to utilize those dams to the maximum. Now, without producing adequate electricity, the majority of the people in the rural areas will continue to use wood. And so you get caught in a vicious cycle where you don't have electricity or any other sources of energy, and so you tend to use wood, you cut trees, you use agricultural residue. If you use the agricultural residue, you are removing vegetation from the land, so the land becomes very infertile. If you remove too much vegetation, a lot of that topsoil is swept away, so your land becomes very infertile, and when you grow crops, you cannot yield good results because the land is very infertile. And if you are poor, you do not have enough money to buy inputs. And so you will only gather enough to last you several months, and after that, you need relief. So somebody like the government has to go around the world looking for relief for you because you don't have enough food. And woe should the rains fail to come on time, or there be a prolonged drought, such as we had this year in Kenya. People will be so unprepared for drought or delayed rains that many of them will die of hunger and starvation. They, their livestock and wildlife. And that's when usually the pictures will hit CNN and other international media to show what is happening in Africa. So these are the issues that we were trying to deal with. And so we suggested to the women, we can plant trees. How do you break that vicious cycle? You can be overwhelmed, but you can break it. At least we thought we could break it by planting trees. So we went to the foresters, and the foresters showed us how to look for seeds. But many of our foresters were taught how to plant exotic species of trees. These are the pines from the north and the eucalyptus from the south. Many of the monoculture forests that we have grow these trees to supply the industries such as paper industry, building industry, the infrastructure for providing telephone poles, for example, Excuse me. And unfortunately, many of these plantations are established on these forested mountains. So what we do is we go into these mountains, which have temperate zones. We clear cut the indigenous forest and we replace them with exotic plantations in order to develop. Now what happens is that these trees, they make it impossible for the local biodiversity to thrive. They kill. They have a root system. Some people say they have chemicals. But whatever they do something that makes it very difficult for any of the local plants and animals and insects to thrive. So when you go into these plantations, you'll be dealing with monocultures, beautiful tall trees standing, but nothing on the ground. And that is exactly the opposite of what an indigenous ecosystem is supposed to be. In an indigenous ecosystem, you have myriads of species of plants and animals and insects. And you have a high canopy that usually spreads outwards. And between that canopy and the ground, you can hardly count the layers of plants, all the way from the creepers and the top trees, all the way down to the mushrooms. And an ecological system like that is teeming with life. But when you clear cut and bring a monoculture plantation, you literally kill, you kill the forest. So when we go in there, we say, this is a forest, yes, but it's a dead forest. It's not what God intended when he created that ecological system. And so we wanted to encourage the government to stop clear-cutting these forests. Sometimes when these forests are clear-cut, they are literally turned into farms of trees. So when these trees are harvested, the land is bare. And suddenly, the greedy, the corrupt, the irresponsible people in power see that as free land. So sometimes they will privatize that land. They will hive it from the forest, clear cut, harvest the trees, and privatize the land. Once they do that, the next thing we see is that the rainfalls don't come in time, and when they come, they are irregular. Some rivers dry up. Some rivers that were very big become small streams, and some streams dry up. So we, as we planted the trees, we eventually made the connection between what was happening to the environment and the kind of governance system we had. And we recognized that the governance system, the people in power, instead of them being custodians of the environment, protecting the environment for the present and the future generations, they were very busy pillaging the environment, privatizing the resources, and no intention of promoting justice and equity. And that's when we introduced into the movement an education program, which you can read in the book, talking about educating ourselves about how we manage our resources, how we govern ourselves, how the two are linked, and why the fact that they are not managing properly, the leaders are not managing properly, and that there is not a linkage, a deliberate linkage, that we have all the problems that we talk about. Problems of poverty, problems of inability to send our children to school, problems that we try to address in the Millennium Development Goals. I know you know those goals. Now, as we try to address those goals, we are addressing problems that are precipitated by the fact that on one side we have resources, but they are being managed irresponsibly and accountably. On the other hand, we have governance that is completely irresponsible, corrupt. And so we started agitating for greater justice, for better governance. And we knew that one way to ensure that you have better governance is to have a multi-party political system. Now, by that time, we had managed as a country to reduce our country into a one-party political system. So you couldn't move. There was no freedom. If you didn't agree with that party, you were thrown out. And if you wanted to stay in the party, you had to sing the song that they sing. And so we started agitating for a greater political system. And it took a long time. But it required that we engage ourselves in self-education and self-empowerment, and especially women, so that we could see how we can change that system. And indeed, in the year 2000, we first broke through in 1992. And we were able to reintroduce, because it was there and it was lost, to reintroduce a multi-party political system. And we also were able to reintroduce a minimum term for any president to serve. We said every president can serve two times, but 5 years every term. After that, doesn't matter how good you are, get out. Now, the problem we had at that time, and we were going to have for the next 10 years, is the fact that we, in the pro-democracy movement, were very divided. And so every time we would have elections, we would be defeated, but we had the highest number of votes together. But because we are fragmented, and the Constitution says you have to, the largest political party or the party that has the highest number of votes will win, our opponent always won, even though sometimes he had less than one-third of the votes. And so again we had to educate ourselves on the need for unity and to deal with the issue of diversity that to us is expressed in form of tribalism. And in 1992, we lost the elections. We thought we learned the lesson, but we didn't. In the year 1997, we again lost. In the year 2002, we managed for the first time to all come together, and we were able to remove that party, which had been in power for 40 years. And that's the government that is now in place, and I have the privilege of serving in that government. Unfortunately, we have been fighting among ourselves, those of you who follow politics in Kenya, and we are going to have elections next year. But the one thing we know is that we have created a democratic space in that country that is not easy to close completely. Of course, people in power always want to try to close that democratic space, but it is up to the citizens to work to make sure that democratic space is not closed. People in power, on their own, there are very few of them who are benign, who believe in justice, who believe in equity, who will sacrifice themselves in order to make it good for the greater majority in the country. The majority of leaders, once they are in power, they want to have the best. And it is not easy for them to voluntarily give up the privileges that they have. So